The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
When Oregon lambasted Iowa, it was the 12th upset of the tournament by a team seeded five spots lower than their opponent. The most ever through a round of 32. We'll be all in on that. And if you have to tell people the outcry over your shortcomings is good because we're going to be better, are you really good enough? Let's go. The NCAA, what they did to this women's tournament.
Happy birthday, Clinton.
Thank you. All right, so what Oregon did to Iowa and USC caramelizing Kansas, those were the last two upsets of the long weekend, but not the biggest. Oral Roberts, the second 15 to ever make the Sweet 16. Loyola, the second 16 in Cameron Crutwig's stash. Syracuse is lurking. Oregon State is surging. UCLA is golden. Clinton Yates around the horn to you. Of all the upsets, which was most impressive?
I hate to be such a homer here, but at this stage, I am most impressed with the UCLA Bruins, partially because of how well their defense is playing. In the last two games in the first half, they've held teams to 27 and 21. They also had to play the play-in game in which they came back from down double digits at halftime and won that game in overtime. So for me, I know it sounds strange because they're a blue blood, but, you know, having to play more games, doing what they did, I think UCLA has been an extremely impressive job that Mick Cronin has done out there.
You're not wrong. You've been in Los Angeles for about 6 weeks, and now you're already a homer. Unbelievable. Jackie McMullen. Whose run has been most impressive of those double-digit seeds?
All I can think of right now, Tony, is Plashy is watching it
all
going,
that's
if I said that, you'd be 10 points. Exactly. I'm going to say, because I checked beforehand, that no one, I repeat, no one on our Around the Horn experts picked Oral Roberts to win a single game. So how can we not say that they are the most impressive team? Now, I went back and looked. I wish I had looked more closely before I did my bracket, because you know what? This is a team that shoots over 11 threes a game. Mm-hmm. Shoots 82% from the line, which when you think about it, in a one-and-done format, is a pretty good recipe, because if you shoot a lot of threes and you hit them, and at the end of the game they try to foul you and you make your free throws, good for Oral Roberts.
All right. Most impressive run for you, Israel Gutierrez.
Well, call me a traditionalist, but for me, sort of the upset runs, it has to be a school that just by saying their name, I know they've never won a national championship, okay? It can't be a blue blood as
okay.
Pick that. So Oral Roberts, to me, is the answer. I mean, first of all, you go, they sort of set the tone early on by beating Ohio State and making everybody question the Big Ten, which we'll get to later. They haven't had a very good tournament at all. And then you go through to the second round and you face a Florida team where you're down 11 points with about 9-10 minutes left. And that's a Florida team that just sort of squeaked one out in the first round and were sort of tested going into an overtime game. And what did they do? Oral Roberts came back and won that game by three and held off Florida. So a 15 seed, having never been there under the current format, getting there, I think that's the one you have to be most impressed with.
Emily Kaplan, the most impressive run by a double digit or Cinderella?
So I know nobody wants to hear about anyone's fantasy football lineup, and I know nobody wants to hear about the upset that you picked in your bracket, but you forgot to save, and then you look the next morning and you realize you didn't.
Oh,
and now
no.
It's me with Loyola.
You're telling us.
But call me a homer. I've lived in Chicago for 5 years. I still believe in the Ramblers. They don't look like a Cinderella team. They just look like a good team. They're amazing defensively. Held Illinois to 0.88 points per possession. You mentioned Cameron Crutwig. They also have a senior, Lucas Williamson. They have Final Four experience that feels so crucial this year, in a year where all of the Blue Bloods and their one-and-dones have floundered out. And how can we mention Loyola without mentioning Sister Jean? Born in 1919, vaccinated, in her pregame prayer, she was incorporating modern analytics. Yeah. It's modern science and religion. It's a modern-day Dan Brown book.
Sister Act 2, as Ramona Shelburne posted, wow. Which was, I thought was great. You know, let's talk about Loyola for a second. Criminally underseeded. Or is it overseeded? I never know which one it is. But if you look at some analytics, Ken Pomeroy, I think, had him as the number 9 team in the country. That's a 3 seed, and here they are playing in the 8-9 matchup. Go ahead, Clinton Yates.
The seeding has been as irrelevant in this tournament as it's ever been as a result of everything we've seen. Mm-hmm. We've seen players had to go. Teams like Virginia couldn't even practice. So at that point, I'm not sure the committee is who I'm blaming about that. It is what
Jackie Mack.
I agree. And think about all the lack of fans and all the great Blue Blood programs like Duke, Kentucky. I'll always wonder if having the Cameron Crazies not there affected them. Look at Oregon, a team that gets prepared to play VCU, then finds out they're not going to play them and waits. And yet I hear our own Jay Billis tell me this afternoon that Oregon should have had a much better seed because they had players injured that have come back in time for the tournament. It's an inexact science more than ever this year.
Emily Kaplan.
I just think, yeah, it was such a hard year to evaluate. You just had such inequity. Teams in the East and South were able to have normal off seasons, but in California and a lot of the Pac-12 teams, they couldn't see their players for 6 months. That led to a lot of early results.
We'll have more on the tournament conferences, especially that breakdown that you so perfectly teased, Israel Gutierrez, in a bit. Now to a story, honestly, we could do every single day, but today we've got the time for it. It's the mess the NCAA has made of the women's tournament, from the workout rooms, to the swag bags, to the food, to distributing the less accurate COVID testing to the women, to the court where March Madness was not allowed to be used, to all the explanations and the re-explanations when the first explanations proved to be terrible when said out loud. The reporting here, which starts with Oregon's forward, Sedona Prince, and all the strength coaches all over the tournament, and the reporting on the COVID testing by Amanda Kristovich with Front Office Sports, and on the March Madness rejection from the Wall Street Journal, Rachel Bachman, Louise Radnofsky, Lane Higgins. Just look at these statements from Dawn Staley and Muffet McGraw. Powerful. Jackie McMullen, on the position the NCAA has put women's basketball in this year.
I'd like to tell you this is a new breaking news story, Tony. This is as old as the game of basketball itself. It's so disconcerting and so disappointing, but I am so glad in this day and age we have social media and players like Sedona Prince who aren't afraid, who said, here, I'm going to show you what we are dealing with. Dawn Staley, Tara Vanderveer, people like that, they've been dealing with this their whole lives. I'll tell you, when I was in high school in the 70s, yes, we did play 5 to a side and there were no covered wagons, okay? When I played in high school, we were wearing field hockey skirts from our field hockey team. My coach, Kathy Delaney Smith, who is now the Harvard coach, filed a sexual discrimination suit against our high school. Now, imagine doing that. She's 20-something years old. Her job could have been in jeopardy. By doing so, by my senior year, I'm playing basketball, I kid you not, in tear-off sweats with my name on the back. Why? Because that's what the boys had. I had an advocate, Kathy Delaney Smith, she'll always be one of my favorite people in the world. I wish every young girl had someone in her corner like I did, and guess what? They don't.
That's an incredible story, Jackie. Let me ask you this. When you hear the NCAA say, well, the furor about this is going to be good for us because now we know and we're going to get our internal conversations right.
Now we know? Yeah. Now we know? How come you don't know already? The story I told you was from the 1970s. It's 2021. Exactly. Are you not paying attention, NCAA? Come on now, guys. Let's go. And I mean guys, not women. Guys.
Emily Kaplan.
You know, that video of the weight room, I saw it posted by women's hockey players that I cover. I saw it posted by stars of the women's soccer team. I saw it being posted by my 22-year-old sister, who is a D1 field hockey player. There is a reason that this resonated with so many female athletes across so many levels. It's because this lesser than treatment is what they become accustomed to. And they have been told throughout their careers to just accept it, to be grateful for what they have. And if they do speak out, then you're greedy or you're troublesome, even if you do deserve more. And it's not just about the weight room. It's also the fact that there was no childcare provided for mothers in the bubble. It's the fact that there was no photographers or transcriptions until the Sweet 16. It's all of these other inequities. And the biggest shame of this to me is the NCAA didn't think anything of it because they didn't expect women to speak up because that's what they're used to. So I'm really glad this was the exception.
Israel Gutierrez.
You know, I think there's 4 people on this panel today who have probably felt like what it feels like to have other people think that you are lesser than. And when you have little symbols like that just tell you exactly what they're thinking, right? There's my weight room. that's what they think of me. Whereas on the men's side, you know, obviously. And so in terms of just how to fix that, as Jackie said, it's been so long. How have we not fixed it yet? But it starts with these types of exposures, and then it starts with the type of communication. You would think that on the women's side, they would say, hey, what are you guys doing on the men's side? Okay, we're going to mirror that over here as best as we can so there are no inequities. Something as simple as that is a conversation you would expect leaders to have all the time. Leaders are just failing us in this scenario, and therefore there are still these sort of thoughts of inequity.
And Clinton Yates.
I'd like to address particularly the logical fallacy that is the argument the NCAA is making behind Emmert. If you're just now finding out about it, why are you seemingly so in control of every other thing that every other athlete does that you're striking down on them on because you don't like the fact that they actually have some individualism? It cannot work both ways. This doesn't even make sense from an argument standpoint, never mind how obviously foul this is on a basic level between in terms of an egalitarian standpoint. Don't lie to us after you get caught.
Right.
That's the biggest issue
right
here, I think, for a lot of people here, is that do not insult my intelligence when we know full well what's going on, because people like my colleagues here have been dealing with it for their entire lives. Be smarter. Yeah. We are too. That's the point.
Well, the exhaustion in the voices of Dawn Staley and Muffet McGraw and Basketball Hall of Famer Jackie McMullen before us, I mean, it's not on women to defeat inequality here. As you said, Jackie, it's on the men here. And for the NCAA to ask for, well, we'll get another chance here and look at the changes we can make. It's not just that. It's you're out. You're out if you don't. It's not just do better. It's do better or you're out. And Jackie, I want to ask one last question. Or you can go ahead, please. I know you wanted to get back in. You rose your hand.
No, no. But I think what I would say is that maybe this will turn out to be a good thing. The difference between today and all the years ago when I played is there was no social media. You couldn't take a photograph. I mean, you'd have to go to the CVS and wait 4 days for it. Now it's instantaneous results. People can see what we're talking yeah about. And that's why I'm so proud of people like Sedona Prince for bringing this mm-hmm to everyone's attention. So maybe now the NCAA is on call for here and forevermore. And anytime anyone sees an inequity, take a picture, put it on Twitter, make a statement, and that's how you have to keep people honest in today's world. That when
there's another part of this, though, right? It's bad business to have this inequality. What did we just see? That the number of bracket tournament challenges that we have at ESPN are more than double. TV ratings are through the roof in all of women's sports during this pandemic. And the NCAA's mission statement, it's not just to make money. In the mission statement, which they put on their tax form, says an inclusive environment. That's where they're failing as well. I'm going to say another thing. There's a national debate going on right now about how to protect women's sports. I believe that's in bad faith. I believe, my opinion is, a lot of that is closed-minded to keep trans youth out of playing youth sports. This is where women's sports need to be protected. This, not having COVID testing, the most accurate COVID testing for the women in comparison to the men, not having the mothers who are coaching and working on staff for these games to have the ability to breastfeed their children, this is the fight for women's sports right now. We're going to take a break right here. We're going to have some fun now with our tournament challenge. We just talked about it. On the men's side, I believe it's Mina Kimes and Tim Kalishaw at the top. And they've been letting us know, but not so many points left on the board for Kalishaw. We'll see. And leading the women's way, Woody Page and Monica McNutt. I believe you four have some explaining to do, by the way. I don't see your name anywhere near the top.
All about the max scores left.
Stop texting me, Tim.
Remember that.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Welcome back to Around the Horn, brought to you by Chase. Coming to you from the Seaport District at Pier 17.
Conferences love squawking about strong first and second rounds, and vice versa. You people love squawking about the conferences who choke. When it comes to the Pac-12, 9-1. When it comes to the Big Ten, 8 teams out. Israel, you stirred us off on this before. Let's go deeper. Are you more impressed with the Pac or disappointed with the Big Ten?
Well, this is just kind of my MO in general, but I'm very much more impressed with the Pac-12, given, you know, what you're seeing there. With the Big Ten, it's just a little bit overstated, right? Like, 4 of those teams lost to better seeds.
See what I did? Yeah, thank you for that.
And then you can't, like, Illinois versus Loyola and the second, you know, and then round 2 with 1 day to prepare against a good Loyola team. Like, the 2 losses that you have to take seriously are probably Ohio State and Purdue. Double-seeded teams probably should.
Oh, that's, you're giving the Big Ten a huge pass there, Jackie Mack. I saw your face when Israel was doing that.
Like, I'm calling shenanigans on you, Israel. You're being an apologist for a conference that everybody said was far and away the strongest in the NCAA. So, you know, I have to be honest, I've been filling out these brackets for a really long time, and I'm always like, is this the year Purdue is going to do it? I'm going to take Purdue. No. So here's the thing. The Big Ten hasn't won a national championship in 21 years. And before that, it was another 11 years. We shouldn't be shocked by this. So I'm excited about the Pac-12. I did not fall into the Big Ten trap.
Emily Kaplan?
It's a big yolky egg on the face of the Big Ten, and especially embarrassing because this is all happening in Indianapolis, which is the heart of Big Ten country. So we had the entire season of the Big Ten navel-gazing about how amazing we are, but it turns out that them beating up on each other the entire season didn't mean they were awesome. And Matt Painter pointed out that Purdue, Ohio State, and Michigan State all lost in overtime, but shouldn't have they been prepared to close out close games?
Exactly. Clinton Yates, more impressed with the Pac-12 or disappointed in the Big Ten?
You know, as we call it out here, Bill Walton's Conference of Champions, it's obviously the Pac-12. They've been going through a lot recently. No, but seriously, that conference has dealt with a lot of things, dating all the way back to football season. So, you know, Emily mentioned it before in the show about teams that couldn't even contact their players. I'm very impressed with the Pac-12 and how they've come together and won some things.
You're such a homer now, Clinton Yates. Hey, Jackie, you mentioned that it's been so long since the Big Ten won a championship. You know how long it's been for the Pac-12?
Oh, I was going to say,
even longer.
They're in the same boat. This is the first year I picked USC. This is, and I cringed when I.
Oh, you didn't pick them to win though. We're saying Arizona '97. That's the last time the Pac-12 won. All right.
Go ACC, Big East, SEC.
Of all the top seeds, let's say 1 or 2. Who's been most impressive through 2 rounds, Emily?
For me, it's Michigan. They were looked at as the most vulnerable number 1 seed heading into the tournament. And look at them now, the only Big Ten team standing. They've done out without Isaiah Livers. Juwan Howard is the most impressive coach in the league to me this year, the entire NCAA. He gets different guys to step up. The last 5 games of the season, they had 5 different regular scores, top scores. The first 2 games of the tournament, 2 different top scores.
Israel, most impressive?
I'm gonna go with Gonzaga, just watching them play. They're just so loaded. I mean, Jalen Suggs might be the number 1 draft pick, and he doesn't really have to do that much for this team to win. You know, they started off, the Oklahoma was a game second round opponent in the first half. You know, Reeves was excellent, and Gonzaga just overwhelmed them, and I think they're just gonna do that throughout the tournament.
Jackie.
Yeah, so Gonzaga and Baylor, to me, they've looked great all year. They still think they're probably the 2 most favorite teams. But I want to talk about Alabama, Tony. No one's talking about them. They're pretty good. You saw how many threes they rained down in their last game, and they're known as a defensive team. They keep teams shooting 28% from the 3-point line. That might get you kind of far.
Yates.
It's got to be Michigan to me. Let's recall that in the Big Ten semis, they almost lost a psychological battle to Maryland and almost got into a fight. Then they lost the finals in that game. And then they come back and they beat an LSU team that was in the final of the SEC tournament. That's very, very good. Michigan to me is extremely impressive considering what their past 2 weeks have been.
Clint Yates says Ruth Gutierrez, very impressive to me as well, just not as impressive today as Emily Kaplan and Jackie McMullen to you guys. Cap and the Mac. It's Showdown in 2 minutes.
All right. Good company.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Another way the NCAA made such a mess of this women's tournament. You don't talk about the games because you have to spend so much time on the weight rooms and everything. This is Troy, Texas A&M. The 15-2 matchup, 4.5 seconds left. A&M was up 2 and inbounding, and you make the call here. Troy coach Shanda Rigby says the refs blew it by not calling backcourt, which would have given Troy the chance to tie or win the game. No call, A&M escapes. Emily, do the Trojans have beef?
You know, I'm a ref apologist. I think they have a thankless job, and we never get to hear from them directly. We hear Shanda, and she's very passionate about it, but we never hear from the ref's perspective. Also, if Troy didn't go 3-for-23 from three, maybe it would have come down to one or two calls at the end.
Ooh. Go ahead, Jackie.
I like the refs, too, but in this case, it's clearly, to me, a backcourt violation. I didn't understand why I didn't review it. The great Rebecca Lobo enlightened me. It is not reviewable. So that's why it wasn't. But I feel bad for Troy. There was also a charge call, Tony, also pretty questionable.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're going home feeling like they were robbed.
Wow, you're all ref apologists. How about the refereeing on this game? All I hear is complaints from you guys. Okay, I'll remember that. We'll move on. Steven Silas. Let's talk about the Rockets snapping their 20-game losing streak. This was a joyous celebration on the court. But did you see Steven Silas after they lost the 20th in a row 2 nights ago? I mean, it was just tough to watch. So, Jackie, what's the takeaway from this weekend with the Houston Rockets?
For me, the whole takeaway of this season for the Rockets is this. Steven Silas has waited his entire career, waited too long as a black coach, by the way, for this head job. And what happens when he gets it? James Harden essentially flips him off, and then he gets stuck with a team that's falling apart at the seams. Ask the Dallas Mavericks what a great coach Steven Silas. He deserves better. I feel for him. He's a good coach.
Yeah, I just think of the Rockets. Since 2018, they've had so much turnover. Daryl Morey, D'Antoni, James Harden, P.J. Tucker, Clint Capela. Finally, they had all this drama to begin the season. This must be cathartic. You can finally start over, start fresh.
Can I request a little more story time with Jackie McMullen from your high school days, your college days, please? 30 seconds, Jackie.
Well, as I mentioned to you before, that Kathy Delaney Smith had strong feelings about how things should go for girls in sports. And one of them was, when we played our away games, she told the boys team, don't let the opponent be in our locker room, because we need to come back and shower. So usually they were. One night we came back, pulled up, they were in there, she took a deep breath, she said, girls, we're going in. And so we did. We went into that locker room,
what?
And to say that a little furor ensued, she was standing up for our rights then. What she didn't know was 2 weeks earlier, we had snuck into Medfield's gym to go see the game. At halftime, the Medfield girls helped us in. They were doing their halftime speech. We just hid and hoped that no one noticed us.
Jackie's got stories. We'll see you tomorrow.